Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth, keeping an eye on Capitol Hill, where the House and the Senate are discussing whether there should be one big, beautiful reconciliation bill or two bills. Scott's going to sort it all out for us. Scott, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me back, Loman.
So exactly where do we stand on this reconciliation process?
Well, last week, the House Budget Committee came to an agreement through various negotiations with fiscal hawks and members of the Budget Committee, and they unanimously passed a budget resolution to really enact the entire Trump agenda, to have tax cuts, to have energy policy, to provide money for national defense and security, and also to, you know, enforce our immigration laws. And the House was in recess this week, so that's sort of on the back burner, right? But the United States Senate was in session. They were trying to process some important nominations with Kash Patel and Kelly Loeffler at the Small Business Administration. So President Trump put out a statement and said that he thought the House and Senate were doing a spectacular job of working together, and he called for his full America First agenda to be passed through one big, beautiful bill so that we can, without question, make America great again. And you would think that that's in strong support of the House process and, you know, ultimately that would help accommodate sort of the wrinkles that the Senate faces. Well, this week, leader John Thune, the new Republican leader that took over for Mitch McConnell, he made his own announcement and said the Senate was going to do a budget resolution to have a narrow approach as it pertains to the immigration money that the administration and OMB Director Russ Vogt have called for. So that would be about $175 billion. And ultimately, what you have here are competing budget resolutions. And so the Senate went into the budget votorama, and you know they have all their amendment process votes that don't mean a whole lot in terms of substance. The whole idea of a budget resolution to get to reconciliation is to pass the same budget through both chambers and give the Congress the reconciliation instructions to pass legislation with a simple majority, which is not subject to the filibuster and instead, subject to some of these other arcane laws and rules within the Budget Act of 1974 and the Byrd Rule, which happened, I think, in about 1985. We are going to witness next week the House of Representatives coming back into session, and the expectation right now is that they're going to still bring up the big, beautiful one-bill strategy to try to get the tax cuts included. It's been pretty clear through Speaker Mike Johnson, Republican leader Steve Scalise, and the House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Jason Smith, that they don't think that they can pass a budget resolution through the House of Representatives unless it also includes tax policy. And, you know, what happens at the end of the year, if we do nothing, is America faces the largest tax increase in our nation's history, $4.7 trillion. And, you know, that's, I think, unacceptable with the current economic environment. It's encouraging that President Trump has backed the House strategy, but his administration is also calling for this money to be quickly adjudicated through Congress, and so he can get a bill on his desk, sign into law, to continue to confront the immigration crisis caused by Joe Biden and the open border policies that the Democrats wanted to accommodate to try to change America and the fabric that we enjoy for a generation. That seems like, it's a lot that Washington is facing. First 100 days expires at the beginning of May, right after Easter. So time is of the essence, and we'll be watching really closely to see how the House is able to move forward with the big budget resolution and if they just go ahead and sort of table the smaller resolution that the Senate is interested in doing.
Meanwhile, back in the States, we have a couple of races for governor taking place this year, one in New Jersey, one in your home state, the Commonwealth of Virginia. Want to give us an update on these gubernatorial races?
Yeah, well, in New Jersey, there's a competitive primary. Several candidates are running, and you know, I'm not sure that there's a real front runner. Bill Spadia is a big personality through his radio show and has big name ID. I think he could be a formidable candidate. New Jersey is one of those states that Republicans sometimes surprise people with. just like Virginia, because of these off-year elections. You remember Chris Christie was elected in 2009 following Obamacare. And, you know, I think that there's still an opportunity for us to pick up these states when voters are paying attention on our side of the aisle and they're happy with what the Trump administration is doing. Right now, you know, I think Trump's approval rating is about as high as it's ever been. And so I'm encouraged by that. In the Commonwealth of Virginia, Abigail Spanberger is very, very likely to be the Democrat nominee. And right now, Winsome Sears, the Lieutenant Governor of Virginia, is by far the front runner for the Republican nomination. They've been trading spars throughout the week. Abigail Spanberger, you know, did a lot of gaslighting of Glenn Youngkin and Winsome Sears, you know, really attacking that administration for a poor education report that showed kids were having a difficult time recovering in, I think, math and reading in Virginia. But at the same time, we need to remember that it was these Democrat politicians like Spanberger in 2021 that wanted to keep the schools closed. They locked arms with Randy Weingartner, and that actually cost Terry McAuliffe his race. I still think there's a pretty strong parents' rights movement in Virginia, and we can certainly win this race. Winsome Sears is a dynamic candidate if she does win the nomination, and you know, there's going to be a lot of attention to try to maintain some Republican control, given the fact that we don't have the legislatures, and we know how radical the Democrats in Richmond are. They've been trying to advance a $15 minimum wage bill that I think passed the House of Delegates. And you know what that's just going to do? It's going to thwart opportunity for young and inexperienced workers that, you know, otherwise aren't going to get $15, $20 an hour. And instead, they're not going to get the important experiences necessary to really start building a resume.
Well, we will keep an eye on those races. And next week, maybe we'll have some time. We can take a look ahead. Many, many more gubernatorial races on the ballot in 2026. We have been talking with Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. And Scott, tell us a little bit about the club.
Well, Club for Growth is based out of Washington, D.C. We're united in the idea of economic freedom, liberty, and opportunity. And Club for Growth Action and Club for Growth PAC do get involved in governor's races. We talked a little bit about those today. But if you want to check out who we support, what work we're doing, visit us at clubforgrowth.org, where you can sign up to become a member for free.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, thank you once again for being with us.
You are welcome.